Hi, I'm Circe Wessner, the director of the Museum of the American Military Family in Tejeros, New Mexico, and this is our podcast, E Pluribus Unum. I'm joined today by the museum's writer in residence, Connie Kinsey, who's going to read a little bit from our just released book by the same name. It's part of a larger project looking at gender, religion, race, identity, culture, and ethnicity in the military and the military family. Hi, Connie. It's so good to have you back on the podcast.
Yes, I'm very happy to be here.
Well, we're
It's
yeah,
a
we're
good day to be me.
yeah, no. It's great to have you back. I enjoy our conversations. So, after 2 years, an anonymous survey, three anthropologists, two professors, two writers in residences, 20 plus essayists, and hundreds of known and unknown people. The book is finally finished. And I know I speak for all of us involved, these hundreds of people. What an accomplishment.
I am so proud of this project. I think we just hit the ball out of the park. This was a home run all the way around. We did great.
Nothing like tooting our own horns, right?
Yes.
Well, I wanted to have you on the podcast today so that you could talk about your part in the book and then read us a little snippet. But I have to ask you first, now that you've had the finished product for a couple of months and you've had a chance to read through it, I want you to tell us your thoughts. When you see the bulk of the project neatly sandwiched between these two covers, what do you think?
That I have to back up just a little bit to answer this question.
Okay.
I am also writing my memoir about being a military brat during the Vietnam era. And so this project dovetailed with that one because it took me down memory lane. And so much came back to me just in writing these different essays, stuff that I hadn't thought about in years. I think what comes to me most about this book, though, with the, neatly packaged between the two covers, which are gorgeous, by the way, I think this is an important project. I think it will be useful for people to study. I mean, it wasn't designed to be that way, but I think it could be an educational aid. It's, enjoyable reading, but I think it would be helpful for people to understand what it was like being in the military.
Well, and I want to sort of follow up on that. So you are a writer, you're working on your memoirs, you write for newspapers and do a lot of freelance work. You've been interviewed for various reasons, both in print and on TV. And I know recently you were discussing this book in the media. How do you describe this book when talking to like television or a reporter?
What I have, my elevator pitch is we're working on a book about gender, religion, race, identity, culture, and ethnicity in the military and military families. This is a serious yet fun look at what life was like for us, for those who are currently going through it. The book spans, our youngest contributor was 9. And the oldest was in the 90s. And so we have a good spectrum of experience represented in this book.
So when we talk about the essays in the book, you mentioned, 9 to 90 something. I wanted to tell our listeners that you and Valerie Bonham Moon, who's the other writer in residence, were just given a list of words, just simple words like religion, boxes, bias, uniform. I think there were like 22 of them. You guys split them between you and wrote essays on each word, and you had free rein to free associate and write whatever you wanted to around those words. So, how did that go?
That was the best possible format you could have given me To pull out the best of me. And I think these essays are some of the best I've ever written. And I don't like what I write normally, but they're good. Shared experiences. But in the book, my essay, let's say what I'm going to read today is Reflection. So my essay on Reflection was accompanied by another essay on Reflection that was written by a 16-year-old. And so, I'm in my 60s, and then we have a teenager. And of course, we had very different responses to that one word prompt. And it's like that all the way through the book.
Yeah, it is interesting to see how different people interpret the same word, de and depending a little bit on their generations and the age differences. So I wanted to ask you, and you said you're going to read Reflection. Why did you pick Reflection to read today?
Reflection was the last essay I wrote. And so when I was writing the essay on Reflection, I reflected on this project and where it had taken me. And one of the things that solidified in my mind that I had not really realized the extent of was my identity as a military brat. And I've always included it in my writer's bio, but I never really thought about the profound effect of those 14 years on me.
Well, cool. Let's hear it. Let's hear Reflection.
Okay, here we go.
All right.
62 years old, and I still identify as a military brat. I include that status in every author's bio I send out with a writing submission. My dad still regarded himself a Marine upon his death at 78. At his funeral, my mother was showing relatives a recently renovated church. They said, "Oh, you don't need to do this now." My mother replied with, "It's okay. It's like he's gone off on another tour of duty. I expect him through the door any moment." My mother still identifies as the strong military wife with a husband who was away from home often. I bought myself a dandy sweatshirt the other day. It's a line drawing of a ripe dandelion with part of the fluff blowing off into the wind, as if someone had blown on it. The dandelion is the unofficial symbol of military brats, adopted by many of us, to reflect getting blown into someplace new, blooming where we're planted, and then moving on when the time comes. Stationary and blooming now for nearly 36 years, I finally have a home that is a place and not just a group of people. But I'm getting old. There's probably one, maybe two more moves in my future. I counted one time and double-checked with my parents. I've had 29 addresses that we can all remember, and we probably are leaving some out. There is no doubt we've forgotten a few. There was an intense period when they were training my father before and during officer candidate school, where we'd be in one place for a few months and then move to another. We've lost count of the cross-country trips, though those that I remember are fond memories. That I still identify as a military brat surprises me now that I think about it. I was 14 when my dad separated from service. 14. That was 48 years ago. How is it that 14 years of my childhood had such a profound impact on me? Something to ponder. I am grateful for the richness and diversity of those 14 years. They shaped who I am and became part of my core. When military brats meet for the first time, they usually sense a kindred spirit. We often say, "I thought you might be," upon learning that they too were a brat. My best brat years were those spent in Hawaii from May of 67 to January of 70. It was there, more so than others, that the full force and majesty of military life was revealed to me. We were living on a crowded base during wartime. The juxtaposition of the paradise that was Hawaii with the misery that was Vietnam is startling. I didn't realize that then, I do now. I can remember being startled by the coconuts falling on the roof of the house, but not by the jets arriving and taking off from the air station we lived on. They were near constant. The tiny lizards on the ceiling worried me, but not my dad's tours of Vietnam. We encountered folks of all races and ethnicities on and off base. I was an adventurous eater and had many firsts there. I had my worst teacher ever in third grade and my best ever in fourth. At the officers' club pool, a fortune teller told me I would be a writer. I can remember driving the highways of Honolulu at 0 dark 30 to pick up my dad, who was coming home for R&R. I was a daddy's girl, and I was so excited in my new dress with matching floppy hat and purse. It was a tropical pattern, green. I remember the hug he gave me. My mom's house is littered with memorabilia of the Marine Corps years. I will inherit some of it and display it proudly. I will acquire her pearls and jade jewelry that my dad bought while overseas. I already have the handmade silk beaded dress that he commissioned in Hong Kong. There's a large brass vase made from a mortar casing. There's a bamboo train case with the word Hawaii in high relief that is technically mine, but that my mother appropriated years and years ago. My dad's sword will go to my son. My dad's footlocker is upstairs in my study. They were good years. They were hard years. As Dickens said, it was the best of times. It was the worst of times. It was the age of wisdom. It was the age of foolishness. It was the epoch of belief. It was the epoch of incredulity. It was the season of light. It was the season of darkness. It was the spring of hope. It was the winter of despair. Those 14 years affected me profoundly, and I am proud to be a Marine Corps military brat.
Wow, very nice. And your dog appreciated
Yes.
it
They bark at ghosts, so I don't know what that was about. I'm sorry.
That's okay. Your essay is beautiful, and it's so poignant that your mother says at your dad's funeral, it's like he's gone off on another tour of duty. I expect him to come through the door at any moment. Do you feel that way about your dad, that he's like only TDY?
I really don't. I mourned my father very, very hard. And in many respects, I'm still mourning him. Writing the memoir, I'm infusing his journal and his letters home to us while he was in Vietnam in my memoir. And I'm fully aware that he's gone. And it's very sad, and I have grieved that very hard.
So I'm currently living in Hawaii, which is on the but on the other side of the island from where you spent your quote best brat years. It's interesting for me to go see where you grew up. So I've been to your school. It's still there. And I sent you some pictures, and you mentioned some of the things that have changed and some of the things that have stayed the same. When you come back to visit a place, I assume you've come back to Hawaii. When you come back to visit a place that you lived as a military child, how do you feel? Is there a sadness? It's changed? Or do you feel like you're on the outside, like a stranger looking at some sort of a mystical place, or regrets?
It's really interesting that you've asked me this question because I have a detailed answer for you. I took my mother back to Hawaii in 2017, and we had been gone. We had not been back to Hawaii since we left on January 10th of 1970. So for 47 years, we had not seen Hawaii. And everybody told me it would break my heart, and that Honolulu was nothing but concrete. But it did not break my heart. I loved every second of our week on Oahu. But we did go to the base because I wanted to see my house. I have written about that house and the coconut trees falling on the roof and the lizards. And I just wanted to see the house to see if my memory of it was anywhere near accurate. And the house was gone. They have apparently torn all the old housing down and built new, much nicer than we ever had, houses. And I felt so bereft, as if somebody had stolen something from me. But we drove up the street to the beach, and of course the beach hasn't changed. And so I walked on the beach that I played in as a child, with the little tide pools and the different little fish in the tide pools. And that brought it all roaring back to me again. And then from there we went over to the elementary school, and it really hasn't changed that much. And one of the things that was so interesting is that I riff on this in my memoir, but we didn't wear shoes at school in Hawaii. We took them off in the morning and we put them in this large box. And then at the end of the day, we put our shoes in our lunch boxes and we went home. And those boxes are still there, but they appear to be using them as a lost and found now and not for shoes. So it sounds like maybe they're making kids wear shoes to school in Hawaii now.
I would think. That's very interesting. And it's like, you think about how things have changed. Wow. So we talked about Avery. So 16-year-old Avery wrote the companion essay to your reflection. Now she's 16 and she's reflecting. She had a very different take on reflection, rightly so, because you're reflecting on the past, and at 16 she doesn't have a whole lot of past to reflect on. So she writes very differently.
Yeah, she does. And I thought it was a fascinating contrast between our ages and where we went with that word. And Avery talks about the world and what is going on, and how we have become more accepting of the individual with all their quirks than we've ever been before, and how she sees this as a good thing.
Well, so here's something she wrote that was so interesting, and you're right, you're absolutely right. She finds herself reflecting on different global events of the 21st century, and the world changes every day. So to discover, analyze, and understand must be done quickly. Voices of the citizen across the globe have never been louder. And so I'm thinking about you growing up during a brat in the 60s. Those Vietnam War years were tumultuous, and protests and changes were happening across the country. The civil rights movement, the sexual revolution, women's rights. It was a really loud time. And because of the war, the military wasn't very popular. And so at 14 and 15, did you understand what was going on globally? Did you hear, Avery's voices of the citizen?
I did, but it mostly, I realized it when I was 12, actually. We had to write a poem in sixth grade, and Lieutenant Calley was being tried for the massacre of, and so I wrote this poem that starts out, "Lieutenant Calley, who is he? What does he mean to you and me?" And I have ransacked my house looking for the rest of that poem. But apparently, that was my first inkling that not everybody thought this was such a good idea. I had never questioned Vietnam. My mother kept the news off when my dad was doing his four tours. And so I didn't see the news. I didn't know about the protests. We were living on base. And she said, "But don't you remember the protesters outside the gate?" And I said, "No, I don't remember them at all." And she said,
Sorry, I have to interrupt because that you just triggered something, but you're alluding to this collective energy about the base and these protesters because you say the full force majesty of military life on the crowded base, you know, and the juxtaposition and the misery. And I didn't realize that then, but I do now. So even in that line, you're alluding to something you don't remember. But what do you mean? I didn't realize now, you know, then, but I know now.
I was living an idyllic life. My beloved father was gone, but I was pretty much used to that. And Hawaii was a great place to be a kid. I mean, our field trips at school were just epic. I mean, we went to Kamehameha's palace, things like that. The misery did not, it was not until I started interacting with young Marines that I understood that I had a clue.
So, you know, another interesting passage, you know, that struck me just reading your essay was being startled by coconuts, but not by the jets. And then the lizards bothered you, but not your dad's tours of Vietnam. So I think you're mentioning that you know, your dad was always gone, so it wasn't much different. But why didn't your dad's tours to war in Vietnam worry you?
Well, he was, I would have been, I think, 6 when he did his first one. I was 8 when he did his second tour. And I was 10 when he did his third. And so my mother was sheltered us very much. Like I said before, we did not have the news on. And she, we talked about this not too long ago. She has a very strong faith, and she just knew deep in her heart that God was not going to take her husband. And I think that her calmness and peace about it didn't give me any reason to contemplate the problem because it wasn't a problem. He was just off on another tour of duty.
Wow. You know, now that you mentioned three tours, I'm in your mother, and I'm thinking, you know, she must have had moments of absolute terror. But you mentioned her faith. She just knew God would not take your dad.
Yes.
Wow. I've got goosebumps here. In your essay, you said you still identify as a military brat, and that surprises you. And you ponder how come your first 14 years has impacted you so profoundly over, you know, the next 48. And so what conclusions have you come with all those ponderings?
One of the things that, I think is characteristic of brats, whether we're shy or we're outgoing, we adapt very quickly to change. We had to. We had no choice. And most of us make friends easily and quickly. We know how to do it and we're good at it and we do it. I still retain those abilities. I can make friends really, really fast. I'm also, I think, open to new experiences. Unlike many people around here, I live in a very, I live in the heart of Appalachia. We're very homogeneous here, and things are just now starting to trickle in that have been mainstream for a while. But I have always been open to these experiences. I can remember when I took a friend to Taco Bell and he had never had Mexican food. I was just astounded. How can you not have had, not that Taco Bell is Mexican food, mind you, but I think it's that openness to experience that has kept me vibrant all these years.
So we talk about you then identifying even yet as a military brat. So do you have anything else that you wanted to talk about today or share? Poetry? I think you've been writing on some things, huh?
Yeah, I'm working on the memoir, and I'm also writing. The memoir is hard work, and it's very sad work. And so when I need a break from it, I'm working on a comedy that centers on a young female veteran. And so I constantly am thinking about the military. But I was at a writing retreat here not too long ago, and a poet by the name of George Ella Lyon wrote a poem called Where I'm From that went viral. And it's used in writing classes everywhere to get people writing. And it was one of the prompts that we worked on at this writing retreat. And mine, of course, was very, very different from everybody else's. And
Can
that goes back to being a military brat.
you so can you share your poem with us?
Sure. Where I'm from, after George Ella Lyon. I am from moving boxes and the smell of kiwi shoe polish on combat boots. I am from a home that was a group of people and not a place, where the only constant was the naga hide sofa my brother teased on, and being the new kid. I am from cross-country road trips on Route 66 and missing an exit in St. Louis, the wigwam motel in Arizona and bathrooms you had to put a dime in the slot to use the toilets, from mountains and oceans and deserts and verdant forest, new telephone numbers and addresses and looking at maps to fix myself in space. From Daddy, do we need gas yet? And not, are we almost there? Where network television offered a constant. I watched Gilligan's Island in California, Hawaii, Virginia, North Carolina, and then as reruns in every state since then. I am from, you don't sound like you're from around here. I am from the places that when folks ask where I'm from, I say everywhere and nowhere. I am from taps at sunset and men chanting cadence while running, standing with my hand over my heart at the movie theater when the national anthem was played, and classmates whose fathers never came home. Long stay motels while waiting on housing and using an ironing board to do the worksheets my last teacher gave me to work on until I got back in school again. I am from 30-day leaves, the ever-present green Stanley thermos in the car of the moment, and crisp uniforms, and not being able to hang anything on the always white walls. New churches, new schools, new friends, and all new clothes for the new climate. I am from 29 addresses before I was 29. And now I am from a ramshackle barn in a ramshackle state where I've lived and loved for 37 years. On a dirt road where home is now a place as well as a group of people, where I hang things on colorful walls and throw boxes away, where I've had the same phone number for eons and friendships older than a couple of years. I am from almost heaven in the heart of Appalachia and happy to be here.
Wow,
It
that is so cool.
was a lot of fun.
This might have to be a project for our writer in residence, hint, hint.
Yes, I think so. We'll have to brainstorm.
That was a lot of fun. And as you read, I could s visualize some of the things that I would write as a military spouse, except I would have talked about the smell of spray starch on and the ironing board, and the stench of my husband melting his shoe po his kiwi polish to make his boots shiny. It made the whole house stink, So, but I think your poem is so beautiful and visual, and so many brats will relate to it. Definitely, we're going to come up with some sort of a project around this. So I just wanted to ask, is there anything else that we should cover that I haven't asked? We've got only a few brief seconds left, really, but is there anything you wanted to add?
I think the only thing I want to add is I want to thank you for this opportunity to work on the book. It has been a seminal experience in my life. Thank you.
Well, thank you. You really made a well, you made it the essays between you and Valerie, and of course the essayist. I think that really put the heart in the soul into the data of the book. And if any of our listeners want to purchase a copy of E Pluribus Unum, I'll put a link in the comments below. And so, Connie, it's been great talking to you today. Thank you so much for recording from the ramshackle barn you live in. I wanted to tell our listeners that the GRACE Project, that's what we call the overarching project, was grant funded in part by the New Mexico Humanities Council, the McCune Foundation, and 8 Day Create, as well as the National Endowment for the Humanities. And this podcast is brought to you by the Museum of the American Military Family and Learning Center and has been supported in part by New Mexico Arts, the New Mexico Humanities Council, San Diego Area Credit Union, and organizations like Military Brat Seal and Military Brats Registry. So thank you, listeners, for tuning in to another podcast. And thank you, Connie, for sharing your words, your wisdom, your memories with us today. We really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.